Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Favored this weekend. You think this'll end your embarrassing streak of draws?
Lloyd, I've never been embarrassed about having streaks in my draws. You know, it's all part of growing up.
Hey, you little turd birds! Start touching your toes! And touch each other's toes!
What?
How long was I here?
Not as long as last time, but nobody was hurt.
Okay.
People saying there's something wrong with us. Not the way I see it. I believe in communism. ROM communism, that is. If Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan can go through some heartfelt struggles and still end up happy, then so can we.
This is our turn to make history, and I believe we're gonna do just that.
All right, let's go kick their butts.
Butts on three.
Works for me. One, two, three. Butts!
Welcome back, welcome back. We got TV fanatic herself, Tracy Phillips, back.
Hey there.
Hey there. We are gonna be tackling the hit comedy show and crowd pleaser that is Ted Lasso.
So good.
Currently renewed for a third season and taken up Apple TV Plus streaming platform. It was originally co-created by Saturday Night Live comedian Jason Sudeikis. Basically, and I had no idea, you know, he tried it out beforehand, you know, on like some NBC sports guys, and they just thought they had some total comedy gold, and he decided to enhance it. And at that point, you know, he then met with Bill Lawrence, who is best known as the head creator of Scrubs. And they just kind of just were a match made in heaven, because Bill just likes, I think many people, including, to quote the SNL Nerds podcast, they pretty much just summed it up as like, Bill loves just showing people trying to do nice things and either failing or succeeding in comedic fashion. And yeah, I mean, it just made sense to me that they would ask him to do it, because he's done just so many just uncanny and wacky just sitcom shows that, mm-hmm. you know, weren't laugh track based.
Yeah.
I mean, he even started out, you know, as the co-creator of Spin City. Most people forget. And
I read that, yeah. I didn't realize that before.
Yeah, and that made sense to me, because I never made mm-hmm. a connection with that and Scrubs and all those other shows he did later on. But
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Boy Meets World, there you go. He started off being a team player. Brendan Hunt is, you know, also the side coach. And I just thought it was just so funny. It's like half the time I'm having to tell people, it's like, you realize that's the co-creator. So
yeah,
both the creators are the stars. And, Coach Beard. Yeah. So when you heard this announced, what was your first initial thought? Cause it kind of became pretty apparent. I barely saw any trailer for it, but it was very mm-hmm. clear. It wasn't a sports comedy, even though it had a sports in it.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was kind of weird and uncanny in an interesting way.
I actually didn't hear about. I would see it in the magazines, you know, Entertainment Weekly, TV Guide, awards shows. But I never, not having seen a trailer or anything, I really didn't know what it was about. So I didn't jump on until after the second season had started. And so then we went through, my family went through the first season, and then season two had already started. And then we were at, got to the point where we were watching the one a week until the finale. But it's so funny that it was present. I remember seeing the name of the show and seeing Jason's picture all over the place, but I still didn't really know what it was about until a friend told me about it and, you know, gave me the details. And we like a lot of the same shows. So I was like, yeah, it sounds like we got to give this a try. So it's just, it's kind of funny to me that it was like on the radar totally, but I still didn't really know what it was about. And then even when I started to watch it, it turned out to be even more than what I thought it was about going into it. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
I was the same boat. Like, I had seen partial ads for it and I'm seeing unusual hype. I'm like, okay, you know, clearly this is an uncanny kind of show. This is not going to be, you either get it or you don't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not really about sports. It's not even about just even being just necessarily nutty or wacky or even rude. It's just another just unusual character study. Okay. So,
yeah,
and
yeah,
all these actors, you've seen them in some place one way or another. And it was wild with Hannah Waddingham, who has been on that one DC show, Krypton. I remembered seeing her in part of Game of Thrones and 12 yeah. Monkeys. So I was like, okay, so you got a huge international cast. You got American actors and British actors. And so you got them kind of having a culture kind of discussion. It's like, yeah, mate, that's not how we do things here in London.
right sort of fish out of water kind of thing. Yeah.
And it is kind of interesting how, yeah, it's like some characters are very blunt, and then the Tyler uh-huh. character is very just, well, just give it your best shot.
Yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, it seemed like everyone was just being given equal attention, and all mm-hmm. the characters had something to do. And within like 20 minutes into it, I already knew instantly what I was in for, and was like, okay, so this is going to have a lot of just, this isn't going to take forever to kind of get your attention. And at the same time, this is like, there's so many different kind of jokes. He's joking right. with the press. And I already know instantly there's going to be a lot of stuff he either says dry face or he makes a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
comes up to it and makes it worse. It's like, okay, so there's all kinds of different comedy they got going on here.
Oh sure. And some of it's very obvious, and some of it you don't even catch maybe until the second watch, if you
rewatch.
And some of it's very subtle, you know, and sometimes that is the funniest. But then there's kind of a little bit of the slapstick sometimes too, that's just laugh out loud. It's very rich. I mean, there's comedy everywhere throughout if you really pay attention, and especially if you're into pop culture. And kind of my age group, actually, it has a lot of callbacks to things from when I was a teenager and stuff. So I just get those jokes right away. So,
right.
Yeah. It's a lot in there.
Oh, totally. And I mean, there were even some interesting recurring characters, I think.
Yeah.
The one jerk who buys the stadium, who's like the ex of, the soccer team owner, right. you know.
Yeah,
like,
Rebecca's ex. Yeah, he's awful.
Totally.
He does awful so well.
Oh, yeah. People might know Anthony Head. He's this British actor. He's been on shows like Little Britain, and he was the dad on Buffy. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, you know, yeah, it's like, you know, you just know that there's going to be all kinds of – it's interesting how they're able to show messy stuff, but not to where it just makes you just cringe so much where you're like, I can't bother to watch this anymore. You
know? Right. Right.
Have you heard of Juno Temple before this? I was familiar.
I had not, no.
Okay. Yeah. She had been in like some very brief, you know, just small roles.
And okay.
Dark Knight Rises, Atonement, Maleficent. And she apparently had been on some other TV shows, but I just didn't remember in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like this was just her moment to shine. She took it really seriously. She's like, and I'm going to play this narcissist with a heart. And it's like, and then Brett Goldstein, you know, is also one of the writers, mm-hmm. and he's playing again, you know, what's his wacky name? It's
Roy.
Roy, yeah.
He's Roy just Kent. Always,
cunts, he's going to speak up and just growl at anybody. And so.
Yeah, the growl is great.
And then they had all these other things, like where people are putting up certain signs and everyone knows their place. And then the Jamie guy is like a rival turned unusual ally.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And I especially liked Becca's friend, who's just always nicknaming her Stinky.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome. Yeah. She has some of my favorite lines.
Oh, yeah. I know you're Becca, but you'll always be Stinky to me.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines from Sassy, who seems to be very popular with everyone, is when they're, I guess this is, you know, obviously this is not spoiler free or anything since we're looking at the whole show, but
it's too many names, guys.
the funeral for Rebecca's father, you know, obviously Sassy just has nothing nice to say to Rupert, you know. Ooh. Rebecca's ex. And after the funeral, when they're leaving, they're like, oh, he says, yeah, Bex and I have to get home, the baby, you know, or it's nap time. And right away, Sassy's like, oh, for you or the baby? It just, I love that line. Man. She's just so quick with the lines. You know, she doesn't, no holds barred. So.
Oh, totally. And each episode just flows right into the next one. Sorry.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Even if there's a time gap, it just, you know, you don't really need to revisit what happened. It just, you move right on with the story. One interesting thing I thought about Rupert, too, is, you know, we don't see him a lot, but he seems like a character that will never be redeemed. Now, I don't know that for sure, because when I first met Jamie in season one, I thought, I'm never going to like this guy. I don't care what they do, what kind of story they give him. I cannot stand this guy. Well, sure
he's
enough,
a washed up reality show star. You know, yeah. Something's wrong when you're on a reality show, yeah, and they fire you because you just have no appeal with the rest of the
exactly
people they're painting. Like,
so I thought he was completely unredeemable, but what do you know? They tell a good story and they bring him around. And but I still think with Rupert, I think he's there to just be, you know, an antagonist. I don't really foresee a redemption story with him, but like I said, you never know, because I just couldn't see myself you know, having any fondness for Jamie, and then that really has turned around.
I don't know
as well, so
I guess that brings us to our next question. We're giving us pretty much a big spoiler, so
yeah.
What's your take on Nathan?
oh gosh. Well, you know, it's interesting.
So adorable in season one. By season two, he gets a bigger head, and he has just nothing nice to say to anybody.
Right. He was one of my favorites at the beginning. But then immediately in season two, when he starts being negative and talking down to the new Kit guy, Will, I noticed that right away. Just little things like, don't make the water like that. What did you put in the detergent? You know, things like that. And then, you know, it's just gotten so much worse. But I've also had people point out, and listening to other discussions, that if you look back in season one, you start to see a little bit of that as well, when he starts unleashing some of his feelings and Ted, you know, gives him sort of a format to get things off his chest. And well, you tell them that, you know, you start to see a little bit of it, even if you go back in season one. But my feeling overall to your question is it's very upsetting, you know, for season two.
Oh, totally. Because you're like, obviously, you wanted him to succeed, and at the same time, you're like,
it's going in the wrong direction.
But, and it's a good reminder of, like, when you're in a workplace and you always have someone who quits or something, and you're like, well, I would have gladly addressed that had you told me that, but I don't know what I could have done differently, because I don't know how you interpreted this as I wronged you.
Yeah, abandoned you, basically, is what he was saying. And that just is another aspect, strong aspect of the show, where there's so much more depth to what's going on than someone. It's not just this is going to his head and he's, you know, gone in this other direction. There is so much more behind it, you know, and you start to see that sort of unfold. And there's still so many questions. I mean, you see his relationship with his dad, you know, especially his dad's not really warm to him, and he doesn't really lift him up and edify him. He's always
but that was a good foreshadowing there. Where it was like, yeah, we knew he instantly wanted to be loved, but we had no idea, yeah, that would play into he's going to become a hard ass, he's going to, right, even exploit Lasso's panic attack. Is like, whoa.
So it's been, I mean, you know, you can say the worst things about Nate now, you know, especially the way it ended, that closing shot and everything, but I still think there's a possibility for redemption with him, because there's so much in this story that's about healing and understanding what's really going on inside you and what you're dealing with. You know, Ted was trying to live his life one way to kind of cope with his dad's suicide, and Nate's taking this route to try to cope with obviously a lot of things that are under the surface that need to come out. So I'm pulling for him to have a redemption story.
And you know, Lasso would totally forgive him. Most of us would probably not forgive him, but for Lasso is so patient and knows that everyone just has testosterone that he keeps bottled up inside and just knows how to vent better. Yeah, I was really impressed by this actor's filmography, Nick Mohammed, who plays him. And I noticed he voiced Piglet in the more recent live-action Christopher Robin movie.
He
had a brief role in The Martian. He was in Bridget Jones' Diary 3. I'm like, okay.
Shit. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Lots of stuff. Okay. Yeah, I was not familiar with him beforehand, but he's a very good actor. I mean, he's played this, you know, the full spectrum of seeing him one way in season one and this, you know, gradual change, you know, just to something else.
I think that's just also what the main key ingredient, though, is like they're all used to being part of some giant ensemble. It's like you're going to play this nutty character or this straight-faced guy against all these other uncanny people.
Right.
So they're used to that, and they can build on that as opposed to – and I didn't hear any – behind the scenes melodrama or that anyone didn't get along with each other, so I thought that was cool.
Nor did I.
Steven Manos plays the French midfielder. I thought that was an interesting, you know, add on, because he's just always so spoken.
And there's
the Dutch guy, John. He's very blunt.
Very blunt, yeah.
Oh, I can totally rip your name. I can totally throw it farther than you.
Oh yeah, no, it's cool how they've taken so many of the players without a lot of screen time or dialogue, and you really, you know, identify them in a certain way. You know, they've given just enough of a story for each of them that, you know, they seem familiar. It does seem like a team that you're familiar with, even though we haven't, you know, had any backstories really on most of them.
Oh yeah,
and so forth. But yeah, they've really done well with that, getting you familiar with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we get to Rojas, is like, he's another guy who is like, you just always are fearful of he's gonna have some physical gag. He is the Charlie Chaplin, Jackie Chan of the team.
Uh-huh.
He's gonna probably hurt himself, or he's gonna probably help win them when all hope was lost. And so it is definitely interesting seeing them hold that in suspense.
What's gonna happen? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I saw that some sites claim that this is also produced for Universal. I didn't see the logo from that. I just saw the Warner Brothers Presents. So definitely a lot of people. I guess it's just because it originated on NBC, so they own a little stock of the character.
Okay.
But definitely, I mean, you know, something's up if, you know, that many people wanted to invest in this. And I think
that's
just it. Apple TV kind of just premiered in just the worst possible year, and it was taking a while to kind of gain some fruition, and this one just edged out because it was just easy comfort food.
Definitely is very good timing actually for this type of show. Could not have planned it. Absolutely
could not have planned it better.
But you know, how fortuitous. So
I guess you want to talk a bit about Nigerian teammate Sam.
Yes, very very lovable Sam.
How they all agreed to just censor out the one of those water companies.
Doesn't
have Dubai his father's interest.
Yeah.
And he had it pretty rough because, you know, he comes from a very strict family who's willing to disown him if he doesn't censor out that
Yeah.
company that, you know, has troubled South Africa for a while. So I'm like, okay, I get that, because you got to have someone right. with some strict background who's
sure
got to come out of their shell and realize it.
But you've also seen with him that he, like, he doesn't seem super confident in the beginning. You know, he's a little bit, seems a little bit more timid. And
yes.
but as he takes these steps and you know, did the, you know, taped out the Dubai Air and made that decision, which was pretty radical, you know, when you think about it. We've seen his confidence grow a lot through the series. So I think that's been an interesting journey for him, because, you know, he was the guy who, you know, just wasn't, he played well, but he wasn't getting the respect, you know, from all of his teammates, of course, especially Jamie. And then by the end of the season, you know, he's just this hero on the pitch. So
oh, totally.
Yeah, so yeah, you kind of think he's a little bit shy at first, and you know, maybe he is, and he is respectful to his family, but by doing that and respecting his family, making those decisions, you really see a lot of strength of character and confidence grow with him. So mm-hmm. and then of course, you know, investing in the restaurant.
That was another interesting one, yeah, because some of them had hinted at it before. I could totally rebuild this place. I could be a sponsor of it. And
right.
Just some extra customers, and yeah.
Yeah.
And it is, it's kind of like how Lasso doesn't know whether to take, you know, them calling him, you know, a wanker, which is a terrible thing. seriously or not. It's like, okay, well, now they're saying that, listen to their voice. Now it means affectionately.
yeah, it's almost more a term of affection now. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So.
Totally. Yeah, and you get to kind of also like some of the guys at the pub. And
oh yeah, they're very likable. Very likable.
Half the time they're like, we get it. Well, you know, we'll save you a table, but just, you know, don't forget to pay.
Yeah. Well, and that's the kind of fan you want to think you are for your team, you know, whatever sport it is. You want to feel like you're as passionate as those guys are. They're a lot of fun.
Oh, totally. And I guess it just also helped build that world. You almost kind of feel like you could be walking down the street with them, especially when they you know, dedicate so many episodes to like the time of the holidays to show time passing and them actually embracing their outside life.
yeah that is cool. Mm-hmm. So much to the point where some people thought, when are we going to see more football, you know? And we were kind of starting to miss it at a point because we were seeing so much, you know, outside of the sport and the other parts of their lives.
Oh, totally. It is interesting how they're able to make the strategy be amusing, because, I mean, that just kind of reinforces how, you know, we all learn better when someone makes a joke. Now we're engaged.
Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's what they're having to do. So we, the viewer, are entertained, and then you see the characters, again, just playing off each other.
Yeah.
Clicking.
Oh, what do you think about Higgins?
Ooh. Man, Higgins, baby.
He's become a fan favorite, but I one thing I have a little bit of a hard time with him is he's so likable now. I don't know if we're supposed to believe that the character has actually changed, but he's so likable now that it's hard for me to really envision him covering up for Rupert all those years and, you know, hiding affairs and things like that. You're like, that's just so not Higgins. But, you know, you have to wonder, did he not have as much confidence then? Did he feel so threatened by Rupert that he, you know, went along with it? Whereas under the new regime, he's had an opportunity to do more, to make more decisions.
He
to
was
be more part of a team.
Threatened by and intimidated by Rebecca at first. And he wasn't really taking Ted seriously because, you know, he kind of heard some off-color banter. Well, you know, he's cheaper. Let's get him in here. So I think he was just so used to the toxic environment. His wife kind of also opened up his shows, like, you can have all the players eat here with us. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he learned to not really be much of a tool or a right-hand man and just kind of slowly just say, you know, because then
coming
he starts
to his own. Coming to his own, really.
Oh, yeah, especially when he does the whole, oh, I'm just hanging out with you. I'm moving out the office, you know. He doesn't really have an office, but
that was a great gag, all those different places.
Yeah.
He set up his laptop.
Right. And then sometimes he just wants an excuse to just listen in on him the whole
sure.
Remember, this is the Diamond Dogs meet.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he ever really got to know anybody else at work when Rupert was in charge, you know. And now he's like, he's finding family in the office, you know, which is part of the show, embracing the folks you're around. Mm-hmm. So it's been an interesting journey. It's just, he's so, like I said, he's so likable now that it's hard to think of him that way, but definitely a good turn for him.
Totally. Okay. Oh, I got to bring this up. How about the Guardian reporter, who just kind of...
Oh, Trent Crim?
Yeah, he later gets
fired. Independent? Trent Crim from the Independent?
Yeah, the Independent.
Yeah, well, he has great hair, first of all. Love that look, you know, and the glasses.
He wants to destroy Ted at first, and after a while, he's like, well, now I can't even read this guy.
Yeah, and he comes under his spell, you know, like most other people. You know, I'm really, and that's, I think that's a lot about this show too, is giving people a chance and really getting to know them. Once he spent some time with Ted, you know, he learned so much more about him and saw value and, you know, in what he was doing for the team. But yeah, just, you know, it's just always funny. It doesn't matter how many times he stood there and said, Trent Crim, Independent, you know, you knew what he was going to say. It's just every time it just worked. But yeah, I'm anxious to see what he does next season after the decisions that he made with revealing his source, but then being, you know, ethical enough to admit that he did and, you know, get removed from the paper. So he made a really, what would you call it? An extremely pivotal decision, obviously. It was not just a big decision that impacted Ted. It was a very life-changing decision, career-changing decision for him as well. But I find him to be a very likable character. At first, I wasn't sure. But he does seem to give things a fair shake. Once he spent time with Ted and understood him, you know, he didn't just presume to paint him one way. I think he really is the type of journalist who wants to get to the truth. I don't think he's clickbait and things like that. So he's respectable, you know. I think he's a very respectable journalist until he, you know, made that decision, which he knew, you know, what it meant. But it'll be interesting to see what he does next.
He adds it up after a while where he's like, okay, well, this is to sell the paper versus actually get to the source.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think he's a very likable character.
How many references in pop culture moments did you have to explain to a few people?
Oh, me? Well, I've watched mostly with my husband, so we're the same age. So we got a lot of them, but I did end up explaining some to my son, who's 20. So I'll be like, you know, this was funny, but if you listen to this part too, it was even more funny. And then of course, nothing, it's not coming to me, you know, right off the top of my head here, of course, but there were things that I could explain to my son that made the jokes even better. You know, like you can miss some things and it's still hilarious.
It really is.
But when you get them,
I've watched 3 times the scene where he's like, I'm going to swing an axe just like Jack Torrance. And I had to explain, guys, that's Nicholson in The Shining. Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there was another part where there's like, that sounds like lyrics that, oh, it's Under Pressure by Queen.
Yeah.
Saying figuratively.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad they take the, it's not even a risk, I guess, but I'm glad they take the time to put those in there because they've got to know not everyone is going to get those references, but it's so great for the people who do that it's, you know, it's not wasted.
Never. And it kind of just only, it just helps enhance. They know how to just kind of just say, okay, and now we can go to the next stage where, you know, we do, you know, we show what the hell this has to do with the rest of the things. It's not just people being cute or just random.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. I definitely like the ongoing puns now between Ted and Higgins.
See who will outdo the other.
Yeah. That's kind of fun to see that developing between the two of them. That's kind of like their little thing.
They just can't help it.
No. And you mentioned the Diamond Dogs. Love the Diamond Dogs. That's some good stuff. And seeing, even though Roy won't admit that he is a Diamond Dog now, he did finally.
He's in denial. I'm just.
Yeah, he's in denial. he's there. He's with them. Well, he's with them, and I think we've lost Nate from the Diamond Dogs for now. So there was an opening.
Yeah, I will hope to see, you know, if they'll even play against each other, if they'll get a little more mischievous, or if they'll actually have to have a respectable kind of playoff.
You know, the idea is that there's, and I'm sure you've heard this, is that there's going to be three seasons. Now, will they change that? I don't know, but I think it's been for three. So, I mean, I guess it's not really a bold prediction by any means, but I have to wonder if Nate's story is going to bring him, if they are going to redeem him, bring him back around, and he take over as head coach, because a lot of people are wondering, is Ted eventually going to go back to the United States, you know, so especially because of his son. So
that's definitely when it'll end.
Yeah,
but yeah, like you say, it's like, because that's where a lot of shows get in trouble, where, you know, it was only intended a certain point,
and then they
got greedy with Emmys. But I don't think, you know, I think, you know, they'll discipline themselves, but at the same time, you know, I could stand at least five seasons. I think that's a good.
Oh yeah. I mean, the fans would want it. It's tempting because it's so successful, but then you have to, you know, it's that decision about the storytelling. Is it really going to have the best storytelling over three seasons versus five? Because another thing that I really enjoy about the show is they don't drag things out.
No.
You know, especially with Jamie's journey, the things with Roy and Keeley, you know, there'll be some type of dynamic they have to figure out with one another, but they figure it out in that episode, you know, and move on and learn from it. I'm not a big fan of dragging things out to have drama just for drama's sake, you know? Because this is a show, a water cooler type show. You want to talk to other people about, but the things you're talking about are not really, will they, won't they, or, you know, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, they pretty much resolve things pretty quickly as they go, and keep the journey interesting, but they're not dragging things out, which
Sam kept his secret relationship with Becca. Yeah. It both helped the comedy, but it was also one of those like, yeah, but no one should know about this. We should keep it pretty professional. And I liked how they didn't drag out the Ghana billionaire guy.
Yeah, right.
Because that was amusing. And then of course he shows his true face, and he's no different than Becca's ex. He's just ruthless. And again, like you say, had that been the whole season, that would have really kind of taken away from a lot of the other talking points, like you say.
It would definitely, and it wouldn't have made that story as effective either, because you just saw him a couple episodes ago going overboard doing all these nice things for Sam, and then two episodes later you see him like just saying he's gonna poop in every room in his house, you know. You see it's that is a dramatic shift, and had they dragged that out, I don't think it would have been as
amusing,
you know, has exactly, yeah. It was like, it was more shocking because it was like, wait a minute, you were just buying out a museum and a restaurant and doing all these things. You are totally not that person, you know.
Totally.
So, yeah. So I definitely don't think you always need a slow burn with everything, especially if it's for the purposes of making more seasons or, you know, I mean, I know TV has to make money too, but it's just, I think it's a fine line, and it's real refreshing to see them resolving stories and moving the story forward. So if they only have three seasons of stories to tell, you know, I'm okay with that, because I think they're telling them really well.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think I would be at a loss if I did not bring up Sir Niles's portrayal of the psychologist, Dr. Sharon.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Fieldstone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was kind of interesting, because they kind of did what they did on some of those federal agent shows, where there's sometimes an amusing moment where it's like everyone's kind of profiling the profilers.
Yeah.
It was just so wild how she's more patient with Ted, to where she's like, I still don't know how to read you.
Right.
What can I do to help you? And then there's other times where Ted filing lets loose and you're like, that's what was, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, the character even unloads to a fellow friend or therapist that this guy is driving me crazy. You know, that was fun to see that other side.
Yeah.
He's always calm, cool, collected, insightful, but
no one has
all driving the answers. Yeah, he was driving her crazy, you know. She was doing her job, but just because she's doing her job doesn't mean it's always easy or pleasant.
Oh, don't they?
And he was a challenge for her. But that was a really great relationship, the way he was so closed off at first, you know, and then it was really hard to see her go, I think, for everyone.
Yeah, because I mean, season. she learned more about herself that she's doesn't typically want to talk about, and then she got Ted to just kind of trust people more and just even be more open.
I didn't warm up to her at first either. I just think they played that so well. I was kind of like, oh, she's coming in, this is Ted's territory, and she's coming here and changing.
You gotta have another bureaucrat.
It's like, what does she think she's gonna do, you know? And I'm all about counseling and mental health myself. I even partake in that. So I mean, it wasn't the fact that what she was doing, it was just kind of like they did not make her super likable, I don't think, at first. But then by the end, you're like, she is awesome. You know?
Oh yeah. Episode 2, I think I warmed up to her. I was like, oh, she's very witty, but who would have guessed, you know? I'd seen a lot of her stuff. I'm really definitely impressed by this person, because like, she's been in a bigger stage production recently, The Crucible. She's on Amazon Prime's Catastrophe. She's on the British show Trust Me, and then she's been basically police officers and doctors and a bunch of other stuff I haven't seen.
Okay.
I saw her in the movie London Boulevard, but I didn't know that was her as one of the hospital attendants. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jeez. And she's guest starred on typical British shows like Doctor Who and Waterloo Road and Death in Paradise. So yeah.
Yeah, and it's not easy to play sort of subtle like that. You know, she's got the dry humor.
No,
you know, I don't know. Ted gets to have all the antics and the big lines and stuff. But I was impressed with how she portrayed her, and that was one of my favorite lines, was in when Ted says his goodbye. You know, she doesn't like goodbyes. I don't like them either, so I could relate.
Yeah.
To that. But then when she gets the note, and he used a line basically from Good Will Hunting.
That's right.
I caught that right away. I think,
why does this sound familiar?
Yeah. Oh, I stole my line. You know, that was really fun. Little things like that. You know, I don't think my son would have gotten that either. I think I explained to him how like clever that was, and just a really cool callback to something,
totally,
you know, from the past. Yeah.
So. Oh man. You stole my line. But I didn't expect it to win. I think it's got about 40 nominations. It was like, what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Didn't quite sweep the way that Schitt's Creek did the year prior, but pretty close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Schitt's Creek, and then it seemed like for a while that Breaking Bad and all those other weird character studies were just dominating the awards, and it's like, this comes up and it's like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. So I think all the wins were well deserved. I can't say that I watched all the other shows that were nominated.
I didn't see the award show, but yeah, I'm with you in that it the people who will only watch something based on acclaim are definitely now in for the ride. The people who are willing to give anything a chance have liked what they've seen, and I saw that Zach Braff directed a few episodes.
So yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for Bill to just have a few other Scrubs guys, or maybe even his Cougar Town actors, just come out in there and
make a cameo. Bring it.
Man. And it just seems like, I think Apple's going to keep embracing that, just, you know, because it seems like there's been a bunch of other just platforms, like them and Amazon especially, are just like, just take a bunch of just authors and people who have done a lot of similar other psychological character studies and witty comedy with some heart, and we'll just market on that. You know, already they got all these other giant sci-fi and horror shows on there. I'm like, but based on this and Mythic Quest, which is by has a lot of the Always Sunny and Community guys, I'm like, I think they're always going to embrace that part of it.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah,
I've heard some mixed reviews on what's the one? The Morning Show.
Oh, okay. I have not watched that. I've mostly heard good things, but I haven't
watched it. Yeah. Like, everyone's like, you got all these various sitcom actors playing all these characters who are deeply flawed, you know. And yeah. It's just, I think that's the other thing, too. I think that one was always going to kind of have a troublesome time being marketed because, you know, you're dealing with just very uncomfortable stuff with, you know, news agendas and TV personas. So it's like, yeah. And there are just, unfortunately, some comedians you don't want to see play, you know, terrible people. So it's like, yeah. But
yeah,
I did hear some good stuff about Reese Witherspoon and Steve Carell on that. So I was like, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, with this, I mean, you know, that they pretty much already have just such a likable cast. I don't think even need to really add too many new characters. I'm not going to be opposed to it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, they have done really well with the casting. It doesn't make you long for new or interesting people. You know, everyone's very interesting in their journeys. So, well, I have I asked folks on Twitter, just kind of a general, through the net out there, what are some of your favorite things about the show? And it's interesting, the responses came back, this is not scientific, of course, but came back loosely in sort of three categories. There was a lot of commentary on the women and how they portray women on the show. There were several comments about writing on the show. And there was more than one comment about beard. So if you don't mind, I'll share a few of those.
Please. Yeah.
So at Lincoln's_finger mentioned something about the women, saying, I love how the female characters are written to be supportive and uplifting of one another. They're not jealous or catty, no competition. The scene where Keely lifts up Rebecca on the red carpet is one of my favorites, and how Nora is treated like a peer. It's amazing. And interestingly, that comment, a totally separate comment, was very similar to the one from a fan. I like the handle at Old Rebecca Rocks, saying the women are not automatically pitted against each other for the sake of conflict. Again, when Keely helped Rebecca at the gala red carpet, that felt more real than the usual cattiness and jealousy we used to get from all male writers' rooms. So definitely, you know, a different perspective there. It does portray women much differently than you normally see. It is very refreshing. A couple of people wrote about Beard. Lincoln's_finger said they like Beard as the quiet observer. He's like the mom who knows every single thing their kid is up to, but never lets on because he wants them to see it and try and lie their way out of it.
Oh, totally.
And then there was another one about Beard. This is from _P@Shell. I immediately got drawn to Coach Beard. He is a wonderful support person, ideal even. He respects Ted, but doesn't fear him. He knows he can be honest with him, and he has subscribed to Ted's methods and believes in them. Also, he is so smart. Very true. He does. He's either very well read, or like you said, he observes people, and you can learn a lot just from observing people. But
I think that's just, it's that rare kind of comedy. It's just tapped into stuff. And so as a result, you know, everyone, it seemed like for a while that with every show, everyone had to reveal a shocking plot twist or just complain about just an annoying character. And I think it just didn't open itself up to any of that typical negativity that eventually every show succumbs to, because it's like, it's anyone who doesn't like it is going to probably be in the minority. They just didn't care for that particular comedy style. It's like everyone else is like, they're just digging the character study. So therefore, you know, they have nothing but just witty tweets about witty people to talk about. You know?
Yeah. It is really interesting, Beard's relationship with Ted, like he, and the respect that the tweeter mentioned, because he called him out on a couple of times so far throughout the series where he was like, no, I don't agree with this. Or in the one time where he wouldn't even talk to him, he was giving him the silent treatment. But he, you know, he picks his battles with Ted. For the most part, he does, like the person said, subscribes to Ted's methods, you know, but he knows when to express, if he has a different opinion, when to express it and when not to. You know, sometimes it doesn't matter as much And it's interesting how he's kind of found that sort of rhythm as when to speak up or disagree and when not to, because what most people see from the team and everywhere else, they seem like this really strong partnership, you know, but occasionally they do disagree, but when they do, it doesn't take away from the partnership that they have. And it doesn't, you know, make people look at them as if, oh, they're really not on the same page. You know, it's only when it's really important.
Yeah.
To explore. Yeah.
So now that everyone's kind of overcome a lot of things, it will make you wonder, you know, is like, is someone going to get injured and that's going to be their exit out of the ball game? Because we've already had a bunch of transfers and Sam was considering transferring and then decided, you know, hey, this Ghana guy, he's full of it and I'm going to stay right here. But yeah, so I guess he's going to just focus on the Nigerian restaurant. Jamie has come around so much. That he knows to, you know, keep his thug father out of his life and not worry about fame and fortune and just being a cool team member, I think that's just it too. Is like, this kind of goes back to the whole script writing concept of, you know, what does a character gain and what did they lose, you know, to keep the story momentum going. So I think at this point, Ted, it's going to go back to Ted and it's going to go back to Becca. And then it's going to go back to probably Roy, I guess Keely, I guess she's figured out her main deal. So I guess we'll just see her on occasion, just visiting now that she's part of a PR firm.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, when they include her in the show, now that she's not at the office every day. Yeah,
now she's realized the ups and downs of social media and everything, and it's like, and who knows, Roy might even take time off, I guess, to actually be a reasonable dad. I don't know. And so I guess it might mainly just be Beard and Ted and Becca versus Nathan.
Might be, yeah. Might be. I can't imagine Roy not continuing to coach right now, though.
I'm sure he will.
He's such a foil for so many people and situations that I think he could end up having a pivotal role in hopefully helping Nate turn things around. But because
he might get traded. I don't know.
Yeah.
If he hits another dog, that might be hard to overcome.
Oh, Danny.
Yeah. I get it was an accident. It was funny, but man. Jeez.
I could not see the point of that in the first episode. I'm just like, I'm things with animals just really get to me anyway. Everybody who knows me knows that. And I just couldn't figure out what's the point. But boy, did they make it come full circle there.
It was rare moment in the last episode. Because, anyone else, like, you know, Tarantino would definitely gone too far. We're like, okay, I can't watch this. I'm sorry.
Right.
There are some moments when any movie, you know, where it becomes just to a point where you're like, okay, now you got a terrible image in my head.
But even something like that, that seems so bizarre and we couldn't figure out in episode one of season two, why are they doing this? They managed to make a, like, really a beautiful story by the finale of season two, you know, where they have the, like, sort of the rebirth, the new dog, you know, the young dog, and Jamie giving the ball for the penalty kick to Danny and Danny being nervous, but, you know, he did it. It was just, I mean, you could see a lot of, like I said, actually beautiful moments and all that from something that just seems so bizarre and horrible.
It was definitely a rare moment. And I think it helped that they just left it to your imagination, and then barely on screen. And like you say, is just like they played into all the utter satire of it. So it's like, okay,
yeah,
these guys are clearly animal lovers too.
Definitely, yeah.
Because there are plenty of movies where you've seen before is like, holy moly, was this written by an actual serial rapist or something?
There are
some movies that get too disturbing to where you're.
Absolutely.
Feel like I shouldn't be watching this. But yeah, no, it was definitely a rarity. I mean, even just addressing the whole moments of how Ted's marriage collapses, no one for once no one on either side is villainized. It's just pretty much just like, hey, this was never gonna work.
Yeah, yeah,
And they make good use of the text messages. Uh-huh. And for a while, it seemed like a lot of movies and shows were struggling with that. They didn't know how to incorporate it without it just kind of being a visual gimmick. But they really played it pretty well, especially when you think someone's going to send a response and you see the three dots.
Oh, the three dots. Yeah.
And then think twice. Yep. No, I'm good. I got nothing else to add.
They did. They did make good use of that. And it seemed pretty natural. Like sometimes, you know, it seems a little forced when they do that in shows, but like the, what they were texting back and forth, you know, like, the, especially I'm thinking about the finale of season two when, you know, the papers come out and everything and his ex-wife reaches out to him, just their little dialogue back and forth there seemed really natural, you know.
It really was.
Yeah.
I was even blown away by how, I figured the guys on the Sports Center equivalent were, you know, actual athletes and everything based on the dialogue they were saying. Sure enough, I looked up, I was like, yep, they're actual athletes who are now, you know, DJ equivalents for sports.
Mm-hmm. And I guess,
go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that I hadn't admitted so far in the podcast, but I have not traditionally been a big soccer, football fan, and but I, you know, so then I'm watching the show, I'm like, oh, that's funny, I know enough to see that's funny, and then I start to see that the show is so much more than just that, but they've done it so well that by the end I was longing for more time on the pitch, you know, and wanting to see more of it, so it's kind of made me more of a fan. And yeah, I mean, I've learned a few things, but it's just, you don't have to be a fan of that sport to enjoy it, but I think it, with me anyways, it enhanced, you know, how I felt about the sport. So
I definitely got the same kind of feel, and I'm with you. I could never just get into sports. I could do it casually when there was a party and people are cheering and picking a team, but then, you know, yeah, it had to be just some kind of just, you know, something kind of like Major League or Rocky, where it's like, okay, so there's a fun action adventure or comedy drama aspect to it, so it's inspirational. Yeah. And it doesn't matter whether it's you're into sports or not, but there were plenty of other ones where it's like, well, you'll like this if you're into that, but it's got nothing for anyone else. But this one it's, there's a lot of sports people who are watching it, and there's a lot of comedy drama guys who are watching it. So it's
mass appeal for sure. Oh, how about all the Halloween costumes? Have you been seeing, are you on social media a lot seeing people? I see it everywhere.
I didn't know they were dressing up as them, but
it's cool. Fantastic. It's funny that I've seen several parents dress their toddlers as Ted Lasso, which is really kind of cute. But, but yeah, I saw one person today showed someone who dressed as Rebecca in the Christmas episode. And I at first I thought it actually was Hannah Waddingham. It was a picture from the show. It was really cool. And then so a lot of people dressing up as Ted, a lot of people dressing up as Roy. I don't know if I've seen a Jamie yet, but had seen Rebecca. I'm trying to think who else. It's mostly Ted, of course. I bet there's some people dressing as Coach Beard too. I knew like just the first couple episodes, I was like, this is going to be a popular Halloween costume.
Especially with how they were all dressing up at the Emmys and making fun of that. So
I've seen a lot of good ones. It's been fun.
I'm sure it'll keep growing and growing. I mean, I've never seen Tumblr or Reddit posts just light up this fast about fan theories. It seemed like for a while it was stuff that had been on for a while, and they were talking about over network and cable TV, or even just popular movie franchises, like why does so-and-so make a controversy about this or that, and then you'd see, you know, the usual stuff. Someone gives a legit response, and then someone else does a, you know, either trolls or jokes around or quotes the program. Is like, this has been very unusual. Just everyone's already, usually it's like, it has to be, have some kind of thrilling aspect or a mystery aspect, and everyone's doing predictions. Like, I've never seen a comedy show where everyone made predictions about not who's with who, but
yeah, that's unique.
Yeah.
Well, and apparently there's going to be a LassoCon in December. So it's some kind of virtual meetup for fans. There is a Twitter for it, and I apologize that I don't have that written down, but I'm sure you can search like on Twitter LassoCon, And I'm going to try to check it out as well. I mean, there's just such a great community of fans that just are really enjoying the show together and having something positive to enjoy, you know. And you have the theories, but also people are just really embracing the positivity. And that's fun to see on Twitter, which can, you know, historically be extremely negative.
Mm-hmm.
So
a rarity to where it's like, and you can tell they're just trying to really just kind of pick many people's brains. There's even people who were just like supporting writers who are now jumping on and trying to sign some deals. I saw that Sam Catlin, who had been like a supporting writer in Breaking Bad, signed a deal with them. Misha Green from Lovecraft Country.
And I didn't know about her. Okay.
Skydance Animation. Not Skydance. Skydance Animation. So everybody's trying to do something just atypical. And it's like, I think that's just it. When a few years ago, all these platforms, Paramount Plus and Netflix and everybody was still just kind of at each other's throats. How do we stand out versus who wins the bidding war? It's like now people can tell what's your style versus who just happened to air something. And so I think Apple definitely wanted to just say, hey, you'll know if we, you know, bought this, you know, and because we actually wanted something like that to be on the program versus we got lucky and, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I feel like we pretty much have predicted where the fandom's going and what could possibly be in season three. Obviously, how could we know? You know, it's just so uncommon a show. So, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, if you had asked me early on when Keeley and Roy, which I'm a big fan of them, when they were getting together, I would have never guessed or predicted that they would be such a solid couple throughout the season. I was just like, oh, they're going to mess with them here. Or they're going to cause some problem here and they're probably going to break up. You know, I never would have anticipated or predicted the way things have gone. So as much as I think I have predictions maybe about season three, I may be completely wrong.
I just would like to know what they might even spoof, because they kind of spoofed the fashion industry and interviews being taken out of context for like Forbes type stuff. So they hinted all at all these restaurants and sports stadiums. So I'm wondering if there's just something, I don't know. They might make fun of mascots. They might make fun of, because they kind of already had Jamie be the poster boy whose soul wasn't in the game and then he rebounded. Right. So I don't know. Right. And if Quigley and Roy are doing their own shtick, they might, I don't know, maybe Lasso's doing a lot of singing, so I guess there might be some more music spoofs.
Yeah, that's always fun. The music spoofs and references are always fun.
Everyone's going to definitely grow. I can't imagine if it was meant to be three seasons, I'm sure, I don't know. I know, building on your earlier point, Bill Lawrence did say that Sudeikis had limited availability because he's being booked for all these other projects. So I don't know. Maybe I'm sure everyone will get a moment to shine. I can't imagine them coming this far and being like, and that's it.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. I mean, I think Schitt's Creek was planned for 5 and they went 6, if I remember correctly. So yeah, they may have, who knows? They may have this plan. And I mean, if it works, all I care about is if it works. If it works, I'd love to see more. You know, I just don't want to extend it just to extend it.
Right. Yeah. And it's always hard. You know, you always got actors who get a deal, big deal, but their heart isn't in the material anymore. And then you got, writers who want to move on and create something else that they
want to You want to go out on top. I mean, how many shows have you watched where you got that other season or you got two more seasons, but you're like, oh, really, that last season just didn't, you know,
we didn't need to have it come back.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, you want it, but do you really want it?
And I don't know. It doesn't help either when it's like, if a show has come back multiple times and only gotten progressively weaker,
exactly,
if not worse. I mean, 3-5 seasons, I don't see how they could really outdo themselves. Now, if they went for 10 seasons, then I would definitely be worried.
Yeah. Like,
eventually, jokes stop being funny. It just can't be helped.
Yeah.
people stop telling them as well, to where the fans start forcing laughter and you don't want that. So I mean,
all I know is it's going to be a hard wait for me for season three, because like I said, I came into it, was able to sail through season one, go right into two. Like,
yeah. Oh. Even waiting. Cause sometimes almost all this stuff like premieres on a Friday. When
it's, yeah.
So everyone wants to come home from work and watch it. And I'm like, well,
yep.
We'll try. Yep.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff. So where can we find you on the interwebs and anything else also planned with Everybody Counts?
It's now spinning off. I definitely I do a lot with Bosch. So Bosch on Amazon Prime, and now the spinoff is going to be on at IMDb TV, which is like a subgroup.
Where you can Amazon. Still access it through Prime.
Yeah. You can access a channel on Prime, yeah, or you can access it separately. I think in the United States and the UK so far, not every country has access to it right now, but hopefully that'll grow with the spinoff coming aboard. But yeah, at Bosch Everybody is the my Twitter group for the Bosch podcast that we do, and we'll follow the spinoff. And then we're also going to be covering the Lincoln Lawyer series on Netflix. And so that's at Lincoln Law Pod. But all of the shows that I cover roll up under at undersomanyshows.com. So thus the name, So Many Shows, cover a lot of different things. So yeah, just always love talking about TV. So thanks for including me.
Anytime.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history doll
yeah,
popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be a
did
rough
you watch
movie.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-last plot holes and gratuitous boobies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography, which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Zemanoff, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier, Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author, Wendy Heller, and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VDClinicPod or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet. And in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.